imagine taking your generosity to the next level, impacting more lives and leaving a godly legacy for generations to come. Get ideas and strategies to do just that when you listen to these personal stories from high-level kingdom champions. The Kingdom Investor Podcast showcases business leaders who have moved from success to significance, sharing how they use worldly wealth for kingdom impact. Discover how they grew in generosity, impacted more lives, and built godly legacies. You'll find motivation, inspiration, and practical steps to grow as a Kingdom Investor.
Hello, and welcome to the Kingdom Investor Podcast. This is your host, Daniel White. Thanks for joining us as we interview Micah Locker. Micah is the president of Anchor Investments, a real estate investment company with a mission of being radically generous. He is also the founder of Missions Hotels, an organization that turns abandoned churches into hotels and gives away the profits to invest in communities. Micah sits on various boards across the city and consults with nonprofits. In this episode, we explore how Micah is using real estate to perpetually steward capital to build God's kingdom. If you have enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on LinkedIn, and share it with your friends. And now, without further ado, let's get right into the show. Hello, Micah, and welcome to the Kingdom Investor Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Hey, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are and where you're coming to us from?
Great. Yeah, I'm Micah Locker. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm 42 years old. I'm married to Britt, and I have three young children, two daughters and a son. So my life is busy right now, and I run a real estate investment company here in Nashville.
That's really neat. Can you tell us maybe just a little bit about your day-to-day? What's a exciting project that you're working on right now?
Well, I always tell people our day job is we buy and renovate and restore old shopping centers around the country. So as you know, there's plenty of shopping centers that are downtrodden these days. And our company for the last 15 years almost has gone around the country and repurposed them to bring jobs back to the community and, you know, bring sales tax dollars back to the community and give people a place to go shop again. And then that is my day job. My side job is we buy old churches that are abandoned and we turn them into hotels, and then we give all the profits away to support inner city ministries. So I make my living doing the commercial shopping centers, but my passion really is doing the hotels and, you know, building an economic engine to fund ministry in Nashville.
Wow, that's incredible. And I'm excited to hear how you got into all that. But before we do you mind praying for our audience in just this time?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Dear Heavenly Father, be with us today. Be with Daniel. May you guide his questions, guide my thoughts. May people hear your words and not mine. And may you get the glory and not me. Just pray that something I say today would be an impact to others, and that you would use them and their skills for your glory. Here's what I'm saying. I pray. Amen.
All right, Micah, do you mind just sharing your story with us?
No, I'm happy to. So I am one of five children. I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. I grew up on the wrong side of Memphis, which is why I have such a large heart for the inner city. And I've just seen all the struggles of inner city families. I call our family the working poor. You know, we were not missing any meals, but everything outside of the ordinary day-to-day expenses was an emergency in my family. And, you know, my mom did the best she could. She had grown up in the projects, and so she was trying to make our life better than hers, but she was only high school educated, and her earning potentials, it wasn't for lack of talent or drive or intelligence. It was just life circumstances. She wasn't able to go to college. And then, you know, you just kind of resign yourself to a certain income potential. So I have a ton of respect. I get my work ethic from my mom, and she just worked so hard my whole life to, you know, try to help us and provide for a family of seven. But you know, just couldn't frankly make enough. And, so I saw that growing up, and then, through a long set of circumstances, God basically provided a house for us in a better school district. So, we were zoned for some of the worst schools in Memphis, and, through a really neat long story. We were basically given a house. They let us assume a very low mortgage. And so we were able to go to a great public school in Memphis. And that really changed the trajectory of my family. And so I'm very passionate about inner city education because I just saw it firsthand how opportunity and access to a quality education can just totally reframe your mind and give you amazing life circumstances. And so, so I went to Germantown High School in Memphis, and then I went to University of Tennessee. And my parents told me when I was little, they said, "Hey, you don't have a choice but to go to college, but you're gonna have to figure out how to pay for it because we don't have the financial ability." So, between scholarships and jobs and hustling and a little bit of student debt, I was able to go to UT. And now I can admit that after the last 15 years of bad football, I can finally readmit that I'm a Vol fan. So last year was a lot of fun, but yeah, I went to Tennessee and I was a finance major up there and had really no idea early on what I wanted to do. And then I got very focused on going to work on Wall Street. I was obsessed with the financial markets and learning about them. And I thought, well, if you're going to be in finance, the mecca of finance is Wall Street. That's where the best and brightest go. And I'm going to find a path to get there. So just through a bunch of friends and networking, I ended up being able to intern up there for a hedge fund. And then thankfully a mentor of mine in college, I didn't put this part in, but I was pre-med for 2 years because my dad had raised us and said, "Hey," my dad had never really been able to keep a job. And he always said, like, "Hey, when you get older, you need to be a doctor, dentist, lawyer, engineer. You need a professional degree. And that way you can never like not have an opportunity." And so I had been pre-med for a couple years, and frankly, I just hated sitting in labs all the time. And I thought, man, I'm going to be sitting in the same lab for 12 more years before I actually go to work. And luckily I met some entrepreneurs in college, some of my friends' dads, and they kind of taught me all about entrepreneurship and that was possible for a kid from the wrong side of Memphis, you know? So fast forward, I had to come back to Tennessee for an extra semester to finish my degree because I'd lost a bunch of credit hours switching colleges from pre-med to finance. And so my college mentor was like, "Hey, you've got an opportunity in New York if you want it. But if I was to give you advice, I'd tell you, like, for your final semester, why don't you try something else in business, intern for another industry and see if you like it better in finance?" And I was like, "Can't imagine myself doing that. But if you made me choose, I'd choose real estate. And that's the only other thing I could even get interested in." And he's like, "Great, why don't you go work for my friend?" And within like 2 months, I was like, "This is such a better fit for me." I'm so thankful he gave me that advice because I had been laser focused all through college, interning for finance companies. Like, I was a soul tracked mind. And I went and worked for a real estate guy in Knoxville and just was immediately like, this is a perfect like fit for my personality. I do have a finance strength, but I really like people and problem solving and putting projects together. And I'll pause there. But yeah, that's how I ultimately got introduced to real estate in Knoxville.
So what do you think were some of maybe the keys to transitioning into real estate from finance?
Well, I mean, obviously everything works on numbers in our world in real estate investing. I mean, the numbers have to work. And so there are, I mean, when I meet with college kids now, I'm like, frankly, it really doesn't matter what, like, I do use some of the basic finance skills, but like everything in my experience is industry specific. So, but being very comfortable with spreadsheets and running numbers and how math works, like reading P&Ls, balance sheets, that's really helped me a lot. But really that was what was transferable from a finance degree at Tennessee. But, you know, then I just had to get into the business and really become an expert on the real estate finance side.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how that transition went when you got into real estate? Where did you start? Where did that lead you?
Yeah. So I'm forever grateful for the man I work for in Knoxville. His name's Sam Furrow, and he's a really amazing man. And it took me getting older to realize what a blessing he was to me. But like, so I loved Mr. Pro, and he was a very successful real estate guy in Knoxville. And I wanted to go work for him when I graduated. And I said, "Hey, Mr. Farah, I'd really like to work for you." He said, "Well, selfishly, I'd love to keep you because you're a hustler and you're a really hard worker and I think you do great." But he said, I'm just telling you, like, if you were my son, I would send you to Charlotte or Nashville. He said, "My experience in real estate is you need to be in a growing city to make a living long term." He said, "The more people that move to a city, the more jobs there are, the more houses get built, the more shopping centers there are." And he's like, "So Knoxville's a great town, but it's pretty sleepy." And he said, I'm not going to hire you because I really think you have a lot of potential and I think you ought to move to a bigger city." And honestly, I was disappointed at the time. I just thought so much of him and he was just a great man, super principled, a believer. And I was like, man, this is my dream job working for him. But as I got older and I've since thanked him, I was like, man, what a gift, because, you know, now as a business owner, if I had a young, talented person that was 22 that had a super strong work ethic, I'd be like, man, it'd be hard to like tell them to move on, because you know you want them to be an asset to your company. But you know, and now I have the same mindset he does. I want the best for people. But I was like, man, what a gift he gave me, because not many business owners would have done that. And so anyway, that being said, I didn't have any connections in Charlotte, North Carolina. My family was from Memphis and I was like, great, Nashville's great. It's halfway between Memphis and Knoxville. It's a booming town. A lot of young professional, be a fun place to live. And so I came down and started interviewing for jobs in Nashville and ultimately got a job when I graduated at a company that's now called Cushman & Wakefield, but in Nashville, but I did brokerage for them. So I was selling and leasing office buildings and just grinding it out, 100% commission, and just hustling to make a living.
So how does your faith journey, or where does that start, and how does that weave into your career?
Well, I really became a Christian through Young Life in high school. And I'm thankful for my family, but my family went to a very legalistic Southern Baptist church, and you know, all churches are different. And I'm not saying all Southern Baptists. I always jokingly tell people I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, but the church we happened to go to was very performance based, and so I was driven to be a high performer, and I treated that in my faith life as well. And I was just running on treadmill, getting exhausted, and through a long set of circumstances on how God works, I ended up making some poor decisions. And the Young Life guys just came around me. They had gone to all my sporting events, gone to lunch, eaten, and I just really liked them. I was like, you know, these are just good guys. I really enjoy hanging out with them. And I obviously knew they were Christians, but I was like, if these guys are Christians, like that's attractive to me. If where I go to church is what Christians are about, that I don't have any interest in that. And so basically, they just loved on me and told me about Jesus. And that's how I became a Christian when I was going into my sophomore year of high school.
Wow. Gotcha. And then how did you transition into from the brokerage into doing more entrepreneurial things and starting your own businesses and things like that?
Well, I was not a guy. I was so happy at the job I worked at. And I was very happy that they gave me the opportunity, because they had like said, "We're never hiring college kids again. We've had too many kids. Like, we don't think college kids are mature," because it's a tough business. I mean, you're 100% commission. The sales cycle is really long. So most kids burn out before they make their first check because the sales cycle is so long. But I had worked really hard to like get them to give me a chance. And eventually I think I just wore them down. They're like, okay, you know, and one of their competitors made me an offer, but I really wanted to work for this group of guys. And so I think when their competitor made me an offer, they were like, well, okay, we'll give you a chance. I mean, I just kept showing up at their office every week during college to be like, I really want to work here. What's it going to take? And so that being said, I was there for 2 years, and one of my really good friends from college worked for a developer in Knoxville, and not the same guy I worked for. And they called me one day and were like, "Hey, we're expanding in Nashville. It's a booming market. Can you help us find sites?" I'm like, of course I can find retail development sites. I'm an office broker. You know, I didn't have any clients at the time. So I'm like, man, I'll learn it. Y'all just tell me what you're looking for and I'll hustle. Like, I was like, in full disclosure, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know how to work. And so I hustled and found them sites in Nashville and then got to spend some time with the principal of the firm when he would come down here for site visits. And one day we were driving the car and he just said, "Hey, I really have admired how hard you've worked. And I like, you know, I know you're a high character guy and I like how you've dealt with our company." And he said, "I've always wanted to have an office in Nashville. Would you be interested in partnering with me?" And I'm like, I said, "Man, I'll be honest. Like, I am so happy. Like, for the first time in my life, I have a little extra money." Like, I was like, you know, I paid for college. I showed up in Nashville broke with a broke down car. And now I'm like, I was 2 years in and God had blessed me. And I was like, finally had some margin, help my mom. And, you know, I was like, "Man, I'm honored. Thank you. But like, I have no interest in leaving." But I told him, I said, "I'll think and pray about this." But I said, "If you're looking for a guy like next week, I'm not your guy. Like, I'm not going to make a quick decision on this because I'm just so happy and I'm super grateful these men have given me an opportunity. And I love working with them. I'm learning a lot and I'm seeing some success." And basically I prayed about it for probably 9 months. And I remember walking in, you know, life would be easier if God would give you audible answers, but that's very rare he does. But I do remember vividly walking into my office one day and I looked around, I saw these very successful guys I worked with that were in their 40s and 50s. And I thought, like, these guys have built a lifestyle where if they wanted to leave and start their own business, they couldn't. They couldn't go back to making nothing to build a business. And I'm 25 years old and I'm not married. I don't have children. And if I fail miserably, I've lost nothing. And I was like, I'll be a better broker because I was on the ownership side. So that was just my answer. I remember I was like, "Yep, that's a clear answer." Like, I just remember being like, if I'm ever going to try it, now's the time. And I can always go back to doing what I was doing before. So I sat down with my bosses and told them I was leaving. And I went out on my own, I guess, 18 years ago. So, and partnered with this gentleman in Knoxville and opened an office here and recruited one of my friends who was working for him in Memphis to move over and work with me.
Wow. And tell us more about what you're doing now.
So I was with them for till through 2008, 2009. And then obviously the great financial crisis hit and we were retail developers and that was very difficult. So, you know, I was the young hustler. He was the money guy. And one day he had a lot less money and to no fault of his own. He's a really amazing guy. Frankly, he had some bad lending partners that really took advantage of a situation and put him in a bad spot. So when that happened, I basically started working two jobs, launching my own business. And that was in 2009 while trying to finish well for him and help him however I could. And so, yeah, I started my company Anchor Investments in 2009 and, on the thesis that there was going to be a lot of, you know, cheap real estate to buy. And I just need to go raise a bunch of capital. And I'm a big reader of Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett, and, you know, believe that there'll only be a handful of amazing opportunities in my career to really buy assets at attractive valuations. And when those moments happen, I'm to be prepared and ready to go. So, yeah, so we started in 09 and God's really blessed our business since it started. And I was coming out of a very tough season financially and otherwise. So it was weird. I had like this old business that was struggling, this new one that was like a hockey stick. And I was having to balance that for a couple years. But, you know, the Lord was faithful and got me through that. And yeah, so it's been great. And that's how I got into doing what I'm doing now.
So tell us more about Anchor and what you guys do and kind of how the company was formed and on what premise?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, it was 2009. Raising money was extremely difficult because every day you read in the Wall Street Journal, the world was coming to an end and real estate was going to an all-time low and then lower than that. So, you know, you had to find people that really knew you, knew your character, knew your work ethic. And thankfully, I knew two families that I had a prior relationship with, one personally, and then the other I used to do a bunch of leasing for. So I'd worked with him a lot. And those families both had significant means. So I went to them and said, "Hey, here's my idea. I have all these relationships. There's going to be a lot of real estate cheap, and all I need is capital. I know how to put them together, do them, structure them. I just need money." And thankfully, they agreed to do that. So for the first several years of Anchor, there was two sources of equity, basically two family offices that backed me. And then I decided to go out on my own from them and split off. And just because, you know, wealthy people have their preferences. I laugh. If they read an article about oil and gas one day, they might come in the office and say, "Hey, I know you got these great deals all lined up, but we're going to focus more of a resource on oil and gas because we think it's the next thing, Bitcoin, you know, whatever the thing is." And I didn't like, you know, this is all I do is put together real estate deals. So I didn't like being so beholden to two families, the whims and emotions of them. And I said, man, for years, other families had called me and said, "Hey, we know what you do. We trust you. We like you. Can we invest?" I'm like, "I just don't need the money. I have these two families with, you know, enormous wealth." And so I decided, I just went to them and said, "Hey guys, you're welcome to invest in the future, but like I'm going out and going to raise money from a lot of other families because it's not fair to me that I could line up a great opportunity and you guys just decide you don't want to invest in real estate that week." And so, I spun out from them and kept the company and everything. It was really my business. They just were the investors. So they're like, "Yeah, it's your company. You do all the work." Like, and so that has been a great move for me. And it really, that's when it really gave me the opportunity to, I've always been very personally generous. I think just growing up in the circumstances I did, we had so many people that were generous with my family when we were just really down on our luck. And, you know, we would just pray, "Hey God, please bring us, we need the hot water heater went out. There's no hot water at the house and we have no money. So until you provide the money, like we're taking cold showers." So, I just had a huge heart to be generous, but my partners didn't align on that. They thought like, "Oh, you ought to be generous personally. The company's not generous. Like the company makes money. And then if you choose to be generous, great." And I didn't like that. I always thought like I'd been given this platform to help other people, and my business and personal life were one and the same, you know? And so I, when I spun out from them, that's when we really were able to do what we do now, which our vision statement for our company is to be the most generous real estate company in America, which is a bold goal, but we believe we can get there. And I believe God's given me this business as a platform for generosity. It just happens to be a real estate company, and that's how we make money. But like, we want to go make as much money as possible, but not to build our own networks and buy airplanes and everything. We want to go impact the communities we do business in. And we just feel like God's given us this platform to do it. And it just happens to be a real estate company.
So is there a particular meaning behind the name Anchor?
There's the verse in Hebrews 6, it's God's the anchor of our soul. I've always liked that verse. And I thought it'd be a great logo. I was like, Anchor is a strong name. It means a lot to me that God's the anchor for our soul. It's funny being in Nashville because they started like a couple years after we started the business, they started this Anchor Down thing. And I always joke with people that we're currently in trademark litigation with them because they stole our slogan. But it's been a good opportunity to share my faith with people because people are like, "Oh, Anchor, is that Anchor Tenants? Is that Vanderbilt?" I'm like, it's actually a verse in Hebrews that means a lot to me and talks about how God is the anchor for our souls and our foundation. And so but that's how I came up with the name almost 15 years ago.
And then I wanted to ask what a generous real estate company looks like, because I'm assuming that it's more than just financial giving. Can you maybe unpack that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, we believe we're called to share our time, talents, and treasures. And we always tell the team, like, there's different people on my team that have different measures. I told them, "Hey, when I was 23 years old, starting my career, I had no money, but I had a lot of time." And so, you know, we feel called as a company to be faithful with the resources we have, you know, and our talents. Like, one thing we do as a company is we help nonprofits with their real estate strategy for free. And so, you know, the stuff we already do day to day, putting projects together, raising money, hiring architects, hiring engineers, I always thought that was like a weird skill set. And, you know, I thought I was supposed to go volunteer at the homeless shelter and ladle the soup. What I realized is God has gifted me and my team with certain business acumen that could be a huge kingdom impact. And so now we publicly say, I'm like, "Hey, we'll come volunteer at the mission too, but like really we're good at marketing. We're good at structuring deals. We're good at finding real estate. We have great banking relationships, vendor relationships." So we're like, "If we can serve you, please let us know." And they're like, "Oh my gosh, this would be amazing. We don't even have anybody on our team that knows how to open Excel," you know? So I had to come with peace, realizing like God has helped me develop certain talents and they can have huge kingdom impact. And it doesn't have to be working down the homeless mission. My hours might be better spent, looking over their budgets, offering suggestions, questions. And cause I do that all day in my day job is look at real estate performance. And so but that took me a while to get to peace about, like, I just always thought like, well, these charities don't need this help. Like, you know, they just need me to come down there and serve, or they just want me to give money. And I realized like the talents that we have can have huge impact on them.
So where do you see Anchor going, or what is your vision for the future of Anchor?
I mean, we would like to keep growing the real estate company rapidly because, frankly, the more resources we're entrusted, the more people we can help. And so on the hotel side, we currently have 3 hotels in Nashville. You know, we give away all the money from those. So they have become a great funding mechanism for, we currently have 7 inner city partners that do homelessness, teen moms, workforce training, and then entrepreneurship for entrepreneurs of color. And so, you know, we want to keep growing that and keep adding more partners and be more generous with the partners we have. But that business is a little harder to scale because you can imagine from a fundraising standpoint, if you tell the investor like, hey, great news, you can invest in this, but we're going to give away 100% of the profits. They're like, well, that's, you know, so you have to find a very generous family who believes in the mission. And I'm pitching it as, hey, instead of writing the check to United Way, write a check here. And I can show you how those dollars will have a huge multiplier impact over the next 30, 40 years, however long God gives me. And so, you know, so you have to look at it as a charitable donation, but I'm like, hey, we'll actually give you your money back one day. You know, we're not going to give you any return, but we will give you your capital back at some point. So, but it's also harder to find the real estate because it's super expensive to build these hotels. And we build boutique hotels, so they might be 20 to 30 room hotels, and we run them through technology. So we will hopefully open our 4th one next year. And we'd love to get to 10 hotels in Nashville over time. But the real scalable business is our commercial business, where we raise money in a traditional fashion, get great returns for our investors. And there's a lot of runway on that business. And then with that business as well, we choose to be generous. Every partnership our company runs has local partners in the cities that we do business. So if we own a shopping center in Lexington, Kentucky, we're going to find a couple partners in Lexington because we have a belief that, hey, we made those dollars in Lexington. The community is supporting that shopping center. We want to be a blessing to the people of Lexington. So I don't have as much flexibility to give away as large percentages out of those partnerships, but we do actively recruit generous families to be our investors. And so we tell them, hey, we internally give away significant portions of the money that we make at Anchor. And so we want to recruit families that feel called to do the same thing. And we're not trying to help families buy private jets and stuff. We're like, hey, we want to help you make outsized returns so you can go do whatever you're passionate about and help people. And of course you can keep some of the wealth yourself, but like, we want you not to just give kind of a pittance every year to charity. We want to recruit generous families. Because one thing we've kind of learned is it is very hard for people that have not experienced generosity to become generous. So all of our existing families early on, we just raised money from whoever, as long as they were high character and could write a check and were going to be good investors. But now, and we actively talk to those people. Every correspondence they get from our company is like, hey, here's what we're doing with our money. We'd love for you to partner with us, but they're not obligated to do it. And some of them have responded over the years. They've been with us a long time and because I just encourage them. I'm like, hey, give something and then give something you're passionate about and then start seeing the work they do. And then I promise you will want to give more because you'll start looking at dollars like, well, I could spend this money on this, but I could also give it to this. And wow, I don't really need that. And this, man, that helps a lot of people. So we'll continue to do that. But you know, starting about a year or two ago, we actively started more interviewing investors on like, you know, tell us about you, tell us about your views on generosity. What do you do with your money? What are you passionate about? And, you know, actively recruiting families that feel called to share, you know, the wealth that God's given them to steward.
So I want to go back to what you said a minute ago about making an investment and you're giving away all of the profits. Why do you think that's a good strategy? And what are some of the benefits of doing that versus, you know, kind of, you know, making as much as you can and then maybe giving it away?
Well, I give a lot of credit. I have a mentor. A book that's been hugely impactful for me was called Halftime by Bob Buford. And through that program, I ended up going through their leadership development program and got a coach named Lloyd Reeb, who's an amazing guy out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And he's had a huge impact on my life. But I was about 5 years ago, I was kind of in a season of like, what did God put me on earth to do? Why am I working? I've made enough wealth to provide for my family. And, you know, and I'm not trying to give the illusion I've just made so much wealth, but we live a very reasonable lifestyle. So I was like, I can't pitch to myself anymore that I'm this young, struggling kid from Memphis who's grinding to provide for his mom and his family. Like, that just wasn't my reality anymore. So I really had to do a lot of counseling, prayer, and, you know, meeting with mentors, decide like, why am I working? What's the purpose of my work? And should I think about doing something else? Because I'm not working for a paycheck anymore. And Lloyd really helped me think through. He's like, well, A, just hanging out with you the last couple of years, you love real estate. He's like, I feel like if you never do another real estate deal again, a part of you will die. Like, you'll really miss it. And he's like, and God's given you this great influence and platform in Nashville. Like, if you just sell your company, you're just going to fall out of touch with a lot of people that you can have an influence on long term. And so he was like, what do you do in real estate that you like? And I was like, well, we had started the hotel business with one property downtown because we used to own a bunch of Airbnbs. That's how we got into it. We're like, this is so inefficient, owning Airbnbs all over town. Like, if we could just put a bunch of them in one building and run it like a hotel, that would just scale and be efficient. And so he's like, so I was telling him about that. He's like, why wouldn't you just do more of those? And I'm like, great idea. Why wouldn't I? You know? And so, and he also just kind of helped me frame about, like, I had always seen this divide, like, Anchor makes money, Anchor pays Micah, and then Micah and Britt choose to be generous. Now I always say I'm a Tennessee grad, so I'm not that intelligent, but like, now I realize that, like, no, Anchor is the vehicle for generosity. We're called to be generous to our employees. And then the excess money that should come to me as a business owner, like, the bank, the Anchor, the business of Anchor is generating those profits. Like, they just flow straight out now. Like, I don't see this great divide anymore. Like, okay, the money flows to the business, it hits my personal account, and then we choose to be generous. I realize, like, Anchor is the vehicle for generosity. And just flipping that switch in my mind has given me such a passion for the business the last couple of years about, I feel called to do exactly what I'm doing. And I don't feel called to go into the ministry. I don't feel called to be a Young Life leader. There were moments of time I thought about, well, should I run a nonprofit? I'm like, man, no, I'm doing exactly what God designed me to do. And I just need to do it for a different reason. And then just run this very generous business. And, you know, part of our goal, and the only reason I agree to be interviewed on podcasts, is we're trying to inspire other business owners that there's a different way out there. And selfishly, they're going to just realize, like, their life is a lot better. Cause there's a lot of business owners I know, and some of them are people of faith, some of them aren't, but they struggle at some point. If you've run a business for a long time, it wears you down after a while. So they're like, why? I don't need the money anymore. Why am I doing this? And a lot of them sell it. And I'm like, well, you don't have to sell your business. Sometimes that's the right thing to do. But, like, sometimes you just need to run your business for a greater purpose. And so we're trying to inspire other business owners to do the same and just tell them, you know, how much joy we've received from doing it. And it's really just been a ton of fun.
Yeah, that's really encouraging. Thank you for sharing that. All right. So I have a fun question for you. What is the greatest investment that you've ever made?
Well, I didn't buy Bitcoin when it was like $100. So I wish I could tell you I did, but what is the greatest investment? I mean, we've been so fortunate. I mean, there was a lot of real estate we bought from 2009 till about 2012, and they would all stack up as just home run investments. If you make me name one in particular, we did a deal north of Nashville in a great suburb, and we bought an old Kmart shopping center and from a seller that needed to move on from it pretty quickly. And we didn't know, we had an idea what we could do with it, but like ultimately bought it. And then like a week later, I called Kroger and they were like, we actually were trying to buy that. And I was like, well, we bought it. And they're like, what? And I didn't even know it, but they had been talking to the seller, but they moved so slowly. So basically we bought it and then flipped half the site to Kroger, and it just ended up being a great deal that we didn't like know on the front. And we just knew it was a great piece of real estate at a fair basis. And it was one of those deals, like we thought it was going to be a discount retail shopping center, and then it ended up being a Kroger anchor shopping center. And it's been a home run.
Yeah, that's really cool. All right. How has failure shaped your life?
It's a great question. It's easy for people to talk about their successes. And I hope I come across today with a heart of humility, which is my heart. But like, I've had a lot of failure. You know, I almost went bankrupt in the great financial crisis. And my biggest takeaway from that is I have historically always said I could care less about money. And I really felt that way. And I was like, as long as I can help my mom and relieve some of the pain she's felt for so long, and then make sure my family can go to the beach 1 week a year and pay our bills. Like, that was literally my stated financial goals. You know, coming out of college, and then the Lord really blessed me my first couple of years, I had done very well financially. And then I started this company and we had been up and to the right. And then, you know, for the banks to like basically put us out of business in about a 12-month period, I lost everything. I didn't have to file bankruptcy or anything, but basically like the banks sued everybody. And I mean, they just really took advantage of us. And we felt like, man, we didn't do anything wrong. We were paying our bills. They just called off our loans and we were in a liquidity crisis. And so to have kind of everything you've worked so hard for the 6 or 7 years post-college when you had grown up. So I grew up with no money. Then I had some money. Then I lost it all. I really learned that like money doesn't matter. It does not affect your level of happiness. Like, it's easy to say that when you have a little bit. Like when I meet with young team members, I'm like, I know y'all think this because I have a little bit of money, but I'm just telling you as an older person, like this is true. Like the level of wealth you have is not going to affect your happiness one bit. It's your relationships, your marriage, your children, how you invest your time, where you're having an impact. And I was like, obviously you need a basic level of income to pay your bills. Like being poor is not fun either. But like once you get to kind of middle class, the rest is just a question of what are you going to do with the excess wealth? And so I feel like that's what God really taught me through that season was, what are you going to do with this extra money I've entrusted you? And so that's the question I still ask myself today. I feel a high calling to be a good steward. And, you know, I really do feel that. I feel like God, when I get to heaven, is going to be like, hey, I blessed you to no account of your own. Like, yeah, of course I worked hard and everything, but God, there's no reason a kid from where I grew up in Memphis is sitting where I sit today. And I know that. And so I'm like, well, God obviously has chosen to bless me, and it could all be gone again tomorrow. But for now, he's decided to bless me. And so what am I going to do with the money above and beyond the expenses just to run my household?
That's good. What is the greatest piece of advice that you've gotten?
Well, from a business standpoint, this really changed my whole, I mean, it's why I sit in the seat I sit today. But when I was a young broker at this company, the guys that owned our business sat next door to us in a separate office. They were real estate investors, but they owned our brokerage company. And one day I was hanging out with them after work, and you know, I'd always ask these older guys for advice, and they would always kind of raise money. They would do these deals and then they just kind of go around the office. I mean, they raise money from wealthy families, but they'd always give the guys at the company an opportunity to invest, whatever. We call it pass the hat. And I, of course, I had no money. I was like right out of school, paying off college. And so I made the statement. I said, hey, one day when I make some money, I can't wait to be a real estate investor with you guys. Like ultimately my dream is to be a real estate investor, but I'm just glad to have this well-paying job. But right now, obviously y'all know I'm so broke. And the guy said, hey, if you ever say that again, I'm going to slap you. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, it doesn't take money to do real estate deals. It takes great real estate deals. And I was like, What do you mean by that? He said, well, if you just go put together a great real estate guy deal, a guy like me will put up 100% of the equity and I'll give you sweat equity. I'm like, well, what's sweat equity? He's like, well, if the deal performs well enough, I might give you 20, 30% of the deal for free. I'm like, hold on, you give me equity for free? And he's like, absolutely. If the returns are good enough, it's a deal I wouldn't have otherwise. You put it together. So I'll put up all the cash. And then if it performs like you say, well, you might get 20% of the profits. I'm like, that blew my mind because my dad had always raised us kind of with this mentality of like, the man keeps people down, rich get richer, poor people stay poor. Like there's just no upward mobility, which is not true. America's the greatest country ever. And I'm super patriotic and love. It's the only country in the world you can just grossly change your circumstances through hard work and, you know, everything. So that like, I mean, literally it's like a light bulb went off. I was like, oh my gosh, well, I'm just going to start lining up real estate investments for rich guys like this. And I can build some wealth long-term. I keep doing my brokerage business and making current income, but then I'm just going to start like on the side hustling and finding real estate opportunities and then go raise capital. So that was literally my whole story because I'm like, you know, only in my business, and I'm sure there's others, can you be a person with no money and own parts of real estate projects all over the country. And for the first, I don't know, 10 years of our company, I bet you I didn't put a nickel in because, you know, I was just raising capital. I mean, now we co-invest with our investors because I believe that's the right thing to do if you have the means, because my money's on the line just like theirs. But I didn't, early on, I didn't have any money, but I had these great deals and I was making my investors great returns. But like that literally changed my life from a real estate standpoint.
Yeah, that's really good. And it's, yeah, it's a paradigm shift kind of conversation. All right. Why are you so generous?
Well, I mean, I think for all of us, you got to connect the dots of God's story in your life. And like, I think he allowed me to grow up in the situation I did and allowed a lot of people to come alongside us. Like I have a little charity fund called the Magic Mailbox in honor of my mom, but like my mom's a very faithful person. And, you know, she just our whole life, we'd just be stuck in a tough situation. And she just prayed, God, you know, God, we need somebody to show up. We need something like, we need this amount of money. We got a busted car or whatever, you know, we got to get the car fixed. We don't have, she just couldn't make enough to like, you know, pay all the bills and fix the car for $1,000. And, you know, I always tell a story, like there was multiple times in my life where my mom came inside the house crying and she just had like a wad of cash in her hand. And we're like, where did you get that money? And she's like, God gave us this money. We're like, no, really, where did you get it? She's like, it was in the mailbox. We're like, well, who gave it to us? She's like, God did. And we're like, well, who really gave it to us? She's like, God gave it to us. She's like, it was sitting in an unmarked envelope in our mailbox. And we're like, that's unbelievable. And, you know, obviously I know logically that somebody heard our story, felt called, knew we needed the money and anonymously put an envelope in our mailbox. But we felt like God gave us that money. And so my family, we felt very called to anonymously give money away to help people because I've always said logically, it was probably Dr. Jones at the church and my mom's Sunday school class. She probably said a prayer request. Hey, we really need God to give us money to fix the car. We don't have a working car right now. And he and his wife probably prayed about it and did it. But like, but if Dr. Jones would have given us that money, we would have said, oh my gosh, Dr. Jones, thank you so much. You are so generous, man. We didn't have a car. Whoa, you're such a blessing. And he would have gotten the credit, but because he did it anonymously, God got the credit. And so I've really been passionate about helping people anonymously and delivering money through intermediaries and just being like, hey, somebody that loves God knows, heard your story. They want you to know God loves you. And this comes no strings attached. Take this money. And like, but God gets the credit and we don't. And so I don't know, like, I just think like my life has been a result of a lot of generous acts. I mean, the fact that a person gave us a house and let us assume a very low mortgage because they heard our family's story. And it was like that was the ultimate act of generosity. They could have sold the house and made $100,000 or whatever. And they just felt called to give my mom the house for $500 for signing paperwork. You know, it's like, she literally just like, they just said, assume our mortgage, you can have our house, we're moving to Alaska. And I told my mom, I was like, I want to track these people down because it just changed our life forever. And most of my siblings have done very well in life. But like, the great debate in my household is, hey, if we went to Fraser High versus Germantown High, what does our life look like? Because, you know, you'd like to think you're the kid that could make it out of a tough situation, but frankly, the odds are stacked against you.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Anything else that you want to share with our audience before we enter the mentor minute?
One thing I always like to share is like, you hear people like, I'm a huge fan of Alan Barnhart and Jeff Rutt and these guys. And I, you know, you hear their stories, which greatly influenced me to start thinking more of how to use my business. But I remember listening, being like, how does Alan Barnhart give away 50% of the profits of his company? Like, that's such a big number. And then people hear me speak now and say, well, we give 100% away of our hotel revenue. And like, I remember feeling like, how do you do that? And I always tell people, just start with 1%, give 1% of your profits away to something you and your wife feel passionate about, or you and your team feel passionate about. And like, then over time you can grow that, like, or you don't grow it, but just do something and don't hear these stories and go, man, you know, this is some wealthy real estate guy. I'm sure, yeah, it's easy for him to do, but I just run a plumbing company in Nebraska. It's like, well, who can you serve? Maybe you can do some free plumbing jobs. But I was like, I just encourage people, like, don't hear these stories and think like, man, that's really good for him, but I can't, what can I do? It's like, well, you can do something, even if you're a middle manager at a financial planning firm, like, God's given you certain gifts and influence in your city, and just start somewhere and do something. And so like, that's always my encouragement to people, because I do remember listening to podcasts and meeting some of these men around the country that do these things. And I'm like, I don't even know, how do I get from here to there? You just slowly but surely you do.
Yeah. And I just had a conversation this morning with a guy that I disciple, and he just graduated and is starting his career as a financial planner. And he was asking me, like, where do I start? Like, you know, what percentage is enough? And I'm like, really, it's more about getting started and listening to where God is wanting you to give, because 100% is God's, right? And so we're just his money managers. And so, you know, there's probably things that he's uniquely put in your path, and gifts that he's uniquely given you to invest in. You know, like we were talking about, you know, one of his and his wife's gifts are hospitality. And so I'm like, put money towards hospitality then. You know, that's a form of giving. Is right. If you're investing in hospitality. So anyway, it's just really neat to, you know, kind of talk through, like, you know, you don't have to start at 50%.
That's right.
You know, you really need to be in conversation with God about what he's wanting you to do with the resources that he's put in your charge.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right. So let's jump into the mentor minute. Who is the most influential person that you know, and how have they impacted you?
I have several mentors who had an unbelievable influence on my life. I would say currently, and thank you to all of them if they ever hear this, but I would say currently Lloyd Reeb with Halftime has just been such a gift to me. We think about our stories are very similar. He was a real estate developer, and, you know, so we just speak the same language, and he's just such a wise and gifted guy, and has helped me with my marriage and parenting and real estate and running my business and having an impact. So I have to say that Lloyd has had the greatest influence on me.
Is there a particular book that you're reading that we should read?
Highly recommend Halftime. That book was just a huge paradigm shift for me, because I felt like most of the books I had read historically that were faith inclined were like, you know, sell your business, give your money away, and be a missionary in Africa. And I was like, I don't really feel wired. Like, I feel very wired for business. I mean, I was joking, my wife and I go to the beach, she's reading, you know, a historical novel, and I'm probably reading a business book. Like, I just really enjoy business, and I read business autobiographies. And I was like, so that book really influenced me. It was like, no, God can use your business as a platform. And, you know, I always tell people that read it, Bob Buford just has his story. You have to read it through the lens of your current situation. Like, it was just his story, but like that program and that book have really influenced my life and really honestly gotten me to do a lot of what I'm doing today.
And then what is the greatest lesson in leadership that you've learned?
Man, the greatest leadership lesson. That's a good question. I mean, obviously a lot of people say this, but you are the result of the people around you, good and bad. And, you know, when you start a business as basically a one-man show and you kind of do everything, it is hard to relinquish control on certain areas. So, but like the more gifted people you hire, the and just let them run and make mistakes and, you know, help guide them. But just, you know, really frankly, trust God for the results, like the better things will go. And honestly, that took me a while to get there. I said I wasn't a control, like a person that cared about control, but it was hard in certain areas that I was gifted at early on to like give up and just be like, they're going to only do it 80%. Like I can do it, but 80% is better, you know, and I need to keep growing the business and hiring gifted people and give them a lot of runway to run. So I'd say the quicker you can just, you know, give up control and let people run, the better your business will be. Well, I'm currently raising three toddlers, so I'll accept all prayers, but now we're doing great. I'm super grateful for my wife and my kids, and obviously you continue to pray that God gives us, I guess, a shared passion for what he wants us to do, because my wife is very busy with three kids that are very close in age, and obviously my work demands a certain amount of time. So, you know, you can pray that God just keeps our marriage healthy and continues to give us influence in this city and that we can make an impact for the kingdom.
Absolutely. All right, let's pray. God, I thank you for Micah and his family and his companies and ministries. Lord, I pray that you would continue to allow them to have impact in their city, that they would steward everything that you've given them for your glory and your kingdom. Lord, I thank you that he is a kingdom investor, that he is investing in eternity. And I pray that you would help us all to take what we've learned here and that we would be inspired and encouraged by it, that we learn from it, and that we would grow as kingdom investors. In Christ's name I pray, amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Micah, for coming on the show. And thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Kingdom Investor Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
What if you could take your generosity to the next level, impacting more lives in your community and around the world, creating a godly legacy for generations to come? Now you can. Your first step is crafting your kingdom investing thesis. Reserve your spot in our next online workshop where we guide you through the process of discovering your passions, create a strategic plan, and connect you to opportunities that will help you fulfill your God-given calling as a kingdom investor. Register today by clicking the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Kingdom Investor Podcast.